Okay, what's on the agenda for today? First, what I'd like to look at before we move on is a Tosfos, just one or two lines in Tosfos Daf Zayin Amud Beis. So I think this is an important Tosfos here. Divra Maskil Lo Sagi Delav Ihu Mahil. So it's the second toast, about six lines down from the top. The Al Ha'av Mutal Kidapir Shakuntris. So the Gemara distinguishes between the following two cases. One case is where the Moel, he implements the circumcision and he makes the bracha Al Hamila, as opposed to the Aviya Ben, who makes the bracha lomu with a lamed because he's a bar chiyuva. So Tosfos says the following. It's just two lines in Tosfos. He says, Aval amol gerim, if a person is in charge of milas gerim, so he's the moel who's implementing the milas gerus, mevarech lomu lasagerim. In other words, Tosfos identifies the Moel in the case of Gerus with the father in the case of Milas Bino. And just like the father, when he circumcises his son, the Gemara establishes that he makes the bracha with a Lamed because he's Chayav, so too, in the case of Mol Gerim, whoever is the Moel, it doesn't matter, he will make the bracha Lomul with a Lamed. Why? Shamavare Chayav Lomul Kamo Ha'av Hamol. That the one who's making the bracha, namely the moel, he's obligated in this mila to the same extent that a father is obligated to circumcise his own son. Now I have here a piece from the Hari Kedem, and he writes that Tosfos is basing himself on a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. In Perek Rav Elazar de Mila Kuflam et Zayinam in Beis, the Gemara says for the different girsos in the Gemara, but one girsa is Hamol es Hagerim Omer Asher Kitzanu Tosfos Tzivanu Al Hamila. So it seems that the Moel will say a brach with an Al, and then Hamavarech Omer, which sounds like there's another bracha, or maybe someone else is making the bracha. Asher Kitzanu Tosfos V'Tzivanu Lomu Lesagerim, and then it goes. The bracha goes on and on. Ulahatif Mehem Dam Bris, and it has a chasima to it. Bracha to Hashem Koreis Habris. So it comes out that according to the girsa that we have here in the Gemara and Shabbos, the bracha is al hamila, and Tosfos says that the moel is not going to make a bracha al hamila, but rather lomul. In other words, there seems to be a discrepancy between the Gemara itself and Tosfos. Gemara says that the moel as ager should make the bracha with a lamed, and yet the Gemara says that the moel as ager makes the bracha with an al. However, the Rif has a different girsa. And he says, Hamavarech Lomul Asagerim. The Rama also seems to have this girsa of Lomul Asagerim. So it means that the bracha is with a lamed. He says, Kanira Sheshitas Hatosus Hikishitas Kigirsas Harifa Ramba. Okay. He says, Etzem Svaras Hatosus Tzorech Iyun Rav. He says, I'm very perturbed here by Tosus. The Svar of Tosus Shamavore Chayav Lomul Kimoha Av. In other words, even though all of us are equally responsible for the Milas Gerim, but to say that we have the same responsibility as a father vis-a-vis his own son, Hare Milas Gerim Leka Mitzvah Klal. There's no mitzvah to circumcise a ger. Ha Mitzvah Lo Ramya Klal Lo Al Zev Lo Al Acher. No one has the obligation to be Mal a ger. V'milas gerim eina mitzvah klal, elahu rak maisa hechsher, u'maisa gerus. We're not obligated to circumcise the ger, the potential ger. We're only obligated to circumcise our children. On the other hand, milas gerus is a precondition to what's called hechsher hagerus, to set up the gerus. Of course, what happens after mila? Tvila. We need mila and then tvila. Now, he points out that the Rambam codifies all the laws of mila. Just one second. I am Baram Vehilchas Mila. Now there's something very strange in the Rambam. You know, the Rambam is extremely sensitive and meticulous about where he brings down the halacha. And all the laws of Gerus, with the exception of one, are brought in Hilchas Isurei Bia. The Rambam dedicates an entire chapter in Hilchas Isurei Bia to the laws of Gerus. However, the only exception is the law of Milas Gerus. The Bris Mila for a Ger is brought down not in Hilchas Isurei Bia with all the other dinim of Gerus, but in Hilchas Mila, which would give you the impression that the Rambam is integrating the Mila of Gerus into the mitzvah of Mila, which applies for a father vis-a-vis his son. Umashma sheyesh mitzvah b'milas gerim. So now the plot grows thicker, because it's not only a line in Tosus that we have here in Pesachim, that Tosus says that there's a mitzvah and a bracha on the mitzvah of gerus, of milas gerim, but now the Rama maybe, again it's not very explicit, but by implication the Rama is also integrating milas gerim into the general mitzvah of mila. So Rav Soloveitchik claims that he's still not happy, because nira dekol kiyum mitzvah hu ayidei tvila. And I said, at what point does the ger enter into klal Yisrael? It's only at the point of what? Tvila. Nimtza, that at the time of mila, there's no, you know, he doesn't think it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah there's a separate mitzvah of mila vis-a-vis a ger. But rather you can say that maybe there's a mitzvah of gerus, but then at the time of the mila, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of gerus, because the mitzvah of gerus could only be fulfilled when the ger enters into klali, so at the time of tvila. So Rav Soloveitchik pulls off a lemafreya move over here. And he wants to say that lemafreya retroactively, once he does the tvila, the mila retroactively becomes part of the mitzvah. In other words, the mitzvah is a process that starts with mila and culminates with tvila. So afal gav, even though the peshas mila, even though at the moment of mila per se, adayin hu begiuso, he's still a guy, but nevertheless, since li achar ha tvila, he becomes nichnas l'chlal Yisrael, lif l'mafreya, the mila itself becomes a mitzvah. So this is very, very fascinating, that there might be a mitzvah of milas gerus. Now, in order to support this possibility that there's a mitzvah, again, I don't know where in the Torah it says that there's a mitzvah to be mala ger, he quotes a Ramban in that same Sugyan Shabbos. The Ramban says, mevarchim lamul es hagerim. Now, I'm not sure if the Ramban means that the Nusach HaBroch has to be with a Lamed, but he definitely assumes that there's a Broch on Milas Gerim. And the Ramban says, the Efshar Mipnei She'ikar Mitzvahs Gerim Leger Atzmo, the language of the Ramban seems to assume that if anyone's obligated in the Mitzvah of Gerus, it's the Ger himself. I mean, again, that's kind of what we call Gito V'yoda Ban Kachas, and that simultaneously with his entering into Gerus, he fulfills the mitzvah of Gerus, because again, before he becomes a Ger, how could you possibly consider him Mitzuva? He says, HaGerim hen ke'ilu molem es atzman, it's as if they fulfill the mitzvah themselves, but just they can't do the mitzvah because akati lo chazi. So therefore, the chova is muteles aleihem. The mitzvah to really do the milah is incumbent upon the ger himself, and therefore the bracha is lamed. Even though vicariously, who's going to actually implement the milah? It's going to be the moel, but the bracha itself is related to the bar chiyuva, and that's the ger himself. So in other words, the Ramban and Tosis come to the same conclusion, but for two different reasons. They both conclude that the moel, in the case of gerim, is going to make the bracha with a lamed. The Tosis says the reason why he makes the bracha with a lamed is because of the mitzvah to be malas hager. We don't know exactly where that mitzvah comes from. Whereas the Ramban says that the bracha on lamed is reflective of whose obligation in gerus? The ger himself. And therefore, although the ger is not implementing the maisa milah, that's being done on his behalf, but he himself is the one who's obligated in this mitzvah. Again, you have to get into a problem here. The Ramban himself is aware of this problem, because if you recall, the Ramban shita in lamed and al is that whenever the mitzvah is done by someone else, the bracha is always going to be with an al. So somehow we have to figure out how this works in. Then he writes the following. This is the Ramban. The efshar, and it's possible, the milas ger, chova gmura al hamol. So whereas the first understanding of the Ramban was that the chiyuv is incumbent upon the ger, now the Ramban backtracks and he says perhaps the obligation is on the mol, on the one who's actually circumcising him. Uboi lebruche lomul deha mitzvah zulo misavdal yidei shliach elakol demoil mitzvah denavshe ovid v'ikar. And the Ramban gives himself a good grade for the second explanation, namely that this is a personal obligation incumbent upon the moel, and that's why he makes the bracha with the lamed. So the first explanation of the Ramban is that the lamed of lomul in the bracha of the malas agerim is because of the ger himself. He's the one who's obligated. Now the Ramban shifts his understanding and he suggests that the chova is on the mol. And again, when he means the mol, what's unique about the mol? Why is the mol, the moel, more obligated in this mitzvah than anyone else? There's no answer to that question. We're all equally obligated. Vilachora Nira says Rav Salvation Dizel Kidarko Shel Tosfos, that the last understanding of the Ramban is like Tosfos. The Kavanas Ramban de lo domi l'shchita. You cannot compare Milas Gerim to Shchita. The Hasam lo avi chiyuva el rishus. In other words, no one is obligated in the Shchita. And therefore the mitzvah is that the animal be shechted, but there's no obligation or personal chiyuv to implement the shechita. Aval kan, but here with regard to milas gerim, yesh chiyuv gomur lamul es hagerim v'chiyuv zechal al kol echad v'echad. And therefore he makes a bracha with a lamed. So I'm just mentioning to you, because I was very taken by this, that there is a Ramban that goes on record in his maskon, his final conclusion, that the bracha on milas gerim with a lamed, because we're all equally obligated in this mitzvah to bring this non-Jew into briso shel Avraham Avinu, into Knesset Yisrael, in the mitzvah of gerus. What I don't know is, and this is very perplexing to me, where in the Torah is that mitzvah given? And furthermore, you have to add a lamafreya over here, because if the mitzvah is to bring this non-Jew into Klal Yisrael, then that is only clinched at what moment in time? At the moment of tefillah. So you're going to have to say lamafreya once this tefillah, the meal itself is part of that mitzvah, and we're all equally obligated in that mitzvah.
So why wouldn't this be the same? I have to hear the shofar. So I have to hear the shofar. The ger has to have the milah done to himself. So he has to be personally involved in it. So even though somebody else is performing, it's being done, and I have to complete it.
So therefore,
why isn't it?
So the Ramban's first approach is exactly what you just said, Steve, that just like in the case of shofar, the bracha is going to be with a lamed, mm-hmm, because there's no shlichus. I have to hear the shofar myself. So to hear in the case of milah, the ger himself is fulfilling his own mitzvah, Again, there's a little bit of a problem here because the physical implementation of the meal is going to be done by somebody else. But if you overlook that, because the Ramban's language, again, I'll reread the Ramban. He says, Ikar mitzvahs gerim lager atzmo hu. And therefore, kshumamtzias atzmo lemilo. In other words, he presents himself for the milo. Nimtza kemoles atzmo. It's like I hear the shofar myself. And so too, the ger himself is being mal himself. I don't know how that operates, but the mechanics is a little perplexing, but the maskana, the final conclusion, is that there is some sort of mechanics here in which nimtza kemal es atzmo. It's as if he's implementing the mila himself. It's not a shlichus. It's a kind. You may remember that we discussed this in justifying the brach of lahadlik ner chanukah. We said that the Achsenoy, according to the Ramban, since he chips in for the Nair and he becomes a partner in the Shemen, it's as if he himself was Madlik. So there is such a concept where even though the physical action is being done by someone else, but we relate that action to the person and he becomes the Osa HaMaisa. Halachically, Alpidin, it's as if he did the action. And the Ramban is applying that yardstick to Milas Gerim. So even though you and I see in front of our eyes that Reuven is doing the Mila, but it's really John Paul Jones who's doing the Mila. Okay, we'll give him a new name. And that's because the mitzvah of Mila and Gerus is incumbent upon the Ger himself. Again, which I told you is very tricky because you can't apply a mitzvah or a chova to a Ger before he's a Ger. And once he's a Ger, he's already a Ger. So you're going to have to apply the logic of Gita V'yodo Bon Ka'achas. So I don't know if I answered your question, Steve, but what I'm trying to argue is that in the Ramban's first approach, the bracha on Mila is going to be Lomel for the very same reason that the bracha on Shofar is going to be Lishmoa Kol Shofar. Kilu hu atzmo molas atzmo. But what's more intriguing is the Ramban's second interpretation, which he says is Ikar, and that is that the chiyuv of Mila is incumbent upon all of us to bring this ger into Klal Yisrael. I mean, that it's a very fascinating idea that there's a mitzvah to implement gerus. Okay, now we get back to our sugya daf tes omen aleph. And let's see what we want to talk about. So the Gemara, if you recall, has a problem. Let's review the Gemara's issue. We saw the chametz going into the house. Who's carrying the chametz into the house? The chulda. And in such a case, the Mishnah implies, it's not explicit, but by implication, you're chayav in bedika. So now what happened? You did the first bedika, the weasel took the chametz back into the house, and you saw that. Now you have to do a second bedika. The Gemara quotes the case of Madoras Akum, where we assume that even if there's a nefel there, the weasel, the chulda, took away the nefel. And therefore you're allowed, a kohen is allowed to go in there. So the Gemara wants to compare these two cases to the same extent that when the chulda goes in and takes away the nefel, we can remove the tumma of Madoras Akum. So too, when the chulda goes in to the bias with chametz, we can assume that the chulda consumed the chametz. Why do we need bedika? Comes along Rava, and he says there's no comparison. Because the case of Maduras Akum is safek usafek. We never knew for sure that there was an eifel there. We were only choshesh, maybe there's an eifel there. That's called a safek. And now, we're not sure if the chulda would have consumed the nefel or not. That's also a suffix. So one suffix has the power to cancel another suffix. Not so in the case of chametz, because we saw the chulda going in. And that creates what?
Vadai.
A vadai, excellent. And now it's a vadai. Maybe you want to say the chulda ate up the chametz. We don't know that the chulda did so. And now we have a principle called ein suffix motzi midei. So now the Gemara has a kasha from Chaver Shemes, and here's the case. We have a brisa, and the brisa was already quoted earlier in this Masechta, that If a chaver who's trustworthy on Afrashas Trumas of Maisut dies, he leaves a silo full of grains. We're allowed to eat from those grains. We can assume they're not tevel, but rather they are mitukanim. Mitukanim is the Gemara's language for hafrasha, that hafrasha, the taking off of maaser, has already been implemented. This chaver, on the very day of last day on earth, he was careful to make sure that he was mafresh the maaser, and therefore it's no longer tevel. So the Gemara thinks that should be a violation of the rule of Ein Sofik Motzim Midei Vaday. Why is that so? Because we know at one moment in time that the Peros had the status of what? Tevel. That's called Vaday. So that creates a Cheskes Iser, which is Vaday. We know that it's Tevel. Now you have a Sofik. Well, did the Chaver implement the Afrasha? Did he not? So we have a situation of Ein Sofik Motzim Midei Vaday. And yet, the Brice establishes that Harei Becheskas Misukanim, we could rely on the fact that the Chaver took Maaser, and we're allowed to eat these fruits. They're not Tevel. So the Gemara asks, how could Rav establish that Ein Sofik Motzim Midei Vaday? Here we have an explicit Brice that maintains that Sofik is Motzi Midei Vaday. So the Gemara gives two answers. The first answer is that hasam vaday uvadayhu, that even though we know for sure that these fruits were tevel at one point in time, that creates a vaday, but we also know for sure that he, the chaver, was mafresh, that also creates a vaday. And that's the principle that reflects Rabbi Chanina's statement, which you'll see here about seven lines before the end of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Chazok al chaver she'eno motzi mitachas yodo dover she'eno misukan. In other words, we have a vaday here, that the premise, the assumption on our part, that the chaver was mafresh maser is not a suffix, but rather it's a vaday. So let's take a few minutes of time and try to understand and maybe offer a number of different possibilities as to why this chazaka that the chaver took off maser is a vada. What makes it into a vada? Now let's understand the following. That when the halacha operates with certain assumptions, we can ask, what is the nature of that assumption? And there are two answers to that question. For example, if you want to operate with the assumption, which was the Havamin of our sugya, that the chulda would eat the chametz, so that's called, okay, I don't want to confuse you with the language here, and I honestly don't have time to write this on the board. It's called a ruba de lesser, come on. I'll try to explain what that means. You don't have to know the language right now. It means some sort of an assumption about the way the world operates, you know, the way Teva, the way nature runs the world. There's a natural tendency on the part of a chulda to eat up the chametz. That's called a ruba de lesser, come on, in the sense that we cannot count the rov. It's not a majority that we could say, well, you know, we have in front of us, you know, 10 butcher shops and 9 of them are selling kosher meat. So if I find a piece of meat, I can assume it came from the kosher butcher stores. That's a classical ruba de isa kamon, where it's in front of my eyes, I can count the rove. Or, for example, if I take a census amongst the dayanim, how many think he's chayim and how many think he's potter, and the dayanim, the judges, you know, 9 out of 10 judges, okay, that's not a good number, but let's say the majority of the 23 judges say yes and they say no. That's called a real rove. You can see it in front of your eyes. This is not based on psychology. This is not based on what we call Stoma de milso. Stoma de milso means the way people or animals usually behave. Not so in the case of chaver. In the case of chaver, we're not talking about a rove. You know, if you talk about a rove that most chaverim will be mafresh maser, then we still are within the suffix. there's something about a chaver that takes us out of the realm of a rov. And therefore, it's not a suffek, but a vaday, and it can remove us from the vaday tevel. What allows us to jack up the rov of chaver, that most chaver would have implemented their obligation of hafroshes maser, to the level of a vaday? How do we bridge that gap? Do you follow me? If it's some sort of Ruba the lesser come on, if this is the way people behave, you know, he's a good guy and he's religious and he's observant and he's dedicated to the Lords of Afrosh, Trumas, and Maestros, let's assume that he went ahead and he was mafish. Well, why not say the same thing about the Chulda? And why not assume that the Chulda will eat up the Chametz? So wherein lies the distinction between the Chaver, who will be mafish, Trumas, and Maestros, and the Chulda, who may or may not eat the Chametz? So yesterday I mentioned to you that there are two categories of rov in halacha. This is very fundamental. A classic rov has what's called a miut hanikar. That I have to write on the board. Okay? A miut hanikar. Miut hanikar means that the minority is still significant. We'll say, in a rov that's 4 out of 5, 20% is the miut. The miut represents 20%. That's something that you have to deal with. That's significant. And in that context, if you're talking about a ruba de lesser come on, some sort of psychological premise based on the way people behave, the way animals behave, and so forth, then because you have a miut hanikar, then the rov is not strong enough, not powerful enough to create a vaday. We're still within the definition of a suffix. However, there's something called a rov, which does not have a miut hanikar. The rov is so powerful, it's such a high statistical probability, let's say it's 99%, then that's called a vaday. Then we don't even have to consider the miut. The miut is command the lesser them. It's completely null and void. We don't consider that 1% chance as a serious possibility. And I may have mentioned to you that the Vilna Gaon, in his introduction to Yoredeya, says that that's why if a person went ahead and he shechted an animal, we don't even have to test him. If we don't recognize him, we don't know where he came from, we don't have to test him, we don't need any credentials, we don't need any bedika to examine him in the laws of Shechita. Why? He says, because the rov in this case, that most people who shecht do so, not because they're chutzpin yaks, but because they learned the laws of Shechita and they know what they're doing, that rov is a rov that has no miut hanikar. It is such a powerful rove, it's so high, jacked up the rove, it's so probable, that we don't even have to consider the miut. We don't even have to bother going through the process of investigation and checking him out. So that could be one possibility. It means like that. In the case of a chulda, what percentage of the chuldos will consume the chametz? 60%, 70%, I'll grant you even 80%. But there's always a not-so-silent minority of 20% of chuldas will not be in the mood to eat the chametz. For whatever, they got up on the wrong side of the bed that morning. So that's called a miut hanikar. It's a 20% possibility. So that's called ein safek motzi midei vaday. I know that the chametz went in. I don't know that it went out. It might have gone out. It probably went out. But it's not definite that it went out. And therefore, the chazaka of this bias is that it's a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. The chametz went in. That creates a chiyuv bedika. You need a vadai to tell you that the chametz went out. As opposed to the case of a chaver who left his magira l'malei peros, magura l'malei peros, there... the point of Rab Chanina is that we are so convinced that the chaver would have done exactly what he had to do and he fulfilled his obligation, that therefore I have a rov without a miut nikar. There's no miut nikar. The percentages here are so high that it's considered like 100%. We don't have to take into consideration that 1% chance that the chaver did not implement his hafrosh. Therefore, as opposed to the case of chulda, where even though there was a rov that the chulda would eat the chametz, but it was still a miut nikar, and therefore there's still a suffix, we don't know for sure that the chametz went out. Here, we know for sure that there was hafrosh. How do we know it for sure? Because we have no miut hanikar. That's one way of learning the Gemara. Rashi seems to learn the Gemara in a different way. Rashi says that the Gemara is based on a concept called chaver. And Rashi uses a very strong language. We'll read it again. We read it yesterday. We'll read it one more time. Rashi says at the end of Hasam Vadei Vadeihu, which if you have the wide lines of Rashi, it's about 7 lines down. And he says, Pshitalon Dasri Inu, which I would translate the following. We have no doubt, we're absolutely certain that he was Mafrish. Why? Because Ein Gimgum Vehiluch Achar Rov Bidovar. Gimgum means, you know, you're stuttering. You're not so sure about it. You know, if somebody asks you something and you're not sure, you sort of fumfer a little bit. In Yiddish, it's called. They might gimgum in Yiddish is fumfering. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's real Yiddish, but anyway, that's the way we would say it. So when you go after a rove, yeah, you know what? He probably did it. No. That's not what it means. It's not BC probably rove. Elo chazoka vadois al kol hachaverim. So notice that Rashi says it's a vadai, and that Rashi has no choice in the matter because that's the only way we could distinguish this case from the case of the chulda. But then he adds kolach averim. Do you see that? In Rabbi Chanina in the Gemara, which is about 10 lines up from the bottom of the daf, he says chazoka al chaver. He doesn't say kolach averim. So Rashi seems to be emphasizing the concept of a chaver. And we could suggest the following, that Rashi is taking us into a whole different realm of halacha. This is not rov, and this is not miut nikar, miut she'eino nikar, high probabilities, low probabilities, forget about all that. Rashi is introducing a whole new world. And that is what we call nemanus. A chaver is someone that we trust. If he left these peros in a way that you and I might eat them, he didn't lock them up on, you know, they're not under lock and key, so anyone could have access to them, then he is basically to be trusted that whatever he makes available in terms of food stuff, it's kosher. It's mutter, and it's not awesome. Meaning, in the case of Tevel, he was mafrish, the maser. Now, it's possible, although I have no proof for what I'm going to say now, that we could take this Gemara one step further. And what the Gemara might be saying is that there is no suffix here because we never had a suffix. Maybe that's what the Gemara means to say. The reason why it's Vadai is because a Chaver who's in possession of Tvua, that Tvua doesn't allow a Suffolk. In other words, we could prevent the suffix from even emerging to begin with. As soon as this tvua is in the hands of a chaver, what it means is, don't raise any doubts, don't raise any questions. What I'm saying before is the following. According to the first two interpretations, we have a suffix. And that suffix is based on the fact that this fruit is tevel. How do we get out of that suffix? We need a vadai. And what's the vadai? So we suggested either it's a vadai because the rov, the statistical probability is so strong, or the vadai is a result of chaver, the fact that the chaver has nemanus. If he makes it accessible, he's basically testifying, he's implying a testimony that it's kosher. It's like a person comes home and his wife was in need, but now he has every reason. Right? Now I'm offering a third possibility, that maybe what we're saying in the third possibility is that the power here of chaver is such that it prevents, it's like a protective shield over this tvua, and says that you have no right to even raise a question on this tvua. It's not even a suffix at all. That's what the Gemara means by vada yuvada. Yes.
I understood that. I'm suggesting that the third thing you're offering as an independent definition is really the definition of trusting someone. There's no suffix. You trust them.
Really. In other words, when I have an issue, there is tevel here. I need nemanus to establish that isur tevel was removed. What I'm suggesting is we don't have to enter into the issue of nemanus here. I don't need to go down that path. I could just simply say that the halacha views the tvua of a chaver as if it's mutter. Just like anything that he has in his possession, he took care of any kashrus issues, and therefore there's no suffix to begin with. Why do I say this? What do I gain by offering this third answer? Perhaps we could apply that same reasoning to the case of chametz. You remember that the Gemara, at the very beginning, quoted Madura Shal Akum to prove that if there's a chulda going around, then there's no tumah of Maduras Akum. And the Gemara wanted to say, therefore, by process of equation, of analogy, when there's a chulda running around, there's no chametz in the house. So now, what does that mean? Why does the Gemara think that there's no chametz in the house? The chulda ate the chametz. The chulda ate the nefel in the case of Maduras Akum. What is the Gemara trying to say over here? After all, what is bedika? Bedika's chametz is an obligation because of what? I'm going to give you two possibilities. A, because I know there's chametz there, or B, because there might be chametz there. Which one is correct? There might be chametz. I don't know that there's chametz there. You know, my wife, Baruch Hashem, did a good spring cleaning. I don't know. And like I told you many times, I keep reviewing the same thing. You've heard it from me a dozen times. That it took us 20 years of bedika until we finally found a piece of chametz. And we wanted to make a big celebration. We finally found chametz. Now, you and I might have said, well, wait a minute. You don't know that there's chametz there. Let's assume you did bittul. If you did bittul, then what's the nature, how do you classify the chiyuv bedika? Is it d'oraisa or d'rabbana? It's the rabbana, because midoraisa b'bittul b'al masagi, the Torah is perfectly happy and satisfied with bittul. So let's assume I did my bittul, which I'm obligated to do, because habonik tzarchi yivata. So why do I have to do bedika? Is that a d'oraisa? No, it's only a d'rabbana. No, if I don't know if there's chametz in the house, why do you obligate me to do bedika? After all, safek d'rabbana l'kula. And the Ravid is very famous for saying in his commentary on the Rif, maybe we'll get a chance tomorrow to look at it inside, the Ravid says that the whole essence and the nature of the chiyuv bedika, which the Rabbanan established, is built on safek. And the Rabbanan is saying that even though it's safek, nevertheless you have to be bodek. That's where the Rabbanan took a very strong stand, and bedika is the exception to the rule, the universal rule of safek d'rabbana l'kula. If safek d'rabbana l'kula would apply to bedika, says the Ravid, you would completely undermine the entire enterprise of bedika. Bedika would be meaningless. Just go ahead and do bittul. You've covered your d'oraisa of your bases. Ella, what? Maybe this chametz there. What do you mean maybe this chametz there? Safek d'rabbana l'kula, says the Ravid. apparently the Chovas Bedika, which was enacted by the Rabbanan, undermines the general universal premises of Safek Rabbanan. So the nature of Bedika is that we have to do a Bedika on the Safek. If that be the case, Rabosai, what is the Gemara deriving from Maduras Akum? The analogy to Maduras Akum is totally off base. Because what are you going to tell me? That the Rabbanan were choshesh that maybe there's an Eifel in the Maduras Akum, and yet they relied on a Chulda. Okay, they relied on a Chulda because of the din of Safik Rabbanan Lekula. But what does that have to do with Bedikas Chametz? In Bedikas Chametz, the Rabbanan did not rely on Safik. The Rabbanan said that despite the fact that you're unaware of, right, you're unaware of the fact that this Chametz, that you don't know that this Chametz, then nevertheless, go ahead and do Bedika. So the very essence, claims the Ravid of Bedikas Chametz, is to obfuscate and completely ignore the Safik. And despite the Safik, you have to do Bedika. So now the question is, the Gemara says, well, you know what, the Chulda is going to eat the Chametz. Maybe the Chulda wasn't in the mood to eat the Chametz. So why does the Gemara insist that the whole enterprise, the whole Chiyuv of Bedika goes down the tubes because there's a Chulda there? And you don't have to do Bedika because there's a Chulda there. I mean, that's exactly what Bedika is all about. Bedika means, I know that there was Chametz in the house. That's called a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. That's the first mishnah in the Masechta, and therefore I'm obligated in bedika. Did I check the house? Did I remove the chametz? Well, I know that the chametz went in. I saw the chulda take the chametz inside. So once I see the chulda taking the chametz inside, it becomes a makom shemachnisim bo chametz, and therefore I'm chayav in bedika. That's the very thrust, the very essence of the chayav bedika. What is the Gemara thinking here that he doesn't have to be bodek the house because the chulda would eat the chametz? Yeah, maybe the chulda would eat the chametz. I can give you maybes from now until doomsday. And I'm going to tell you that maybe my wife did a good cleaning job and I don't have to do bedika. But no, the chacham say you have to do bedika as long as there's a possibility that there's chametz there because the chametz went in. Once the chametz goes in, I'm chayiv in bedika. What do you mean the chametz went in? Okay, the chametz went in. But since then, we cleaned it out. No, you're still chayv in bedika. Yeah, go ahead, Menachem.
So you're talking about the chiyuv of bedika, but the Mishnah is only talking about this. Is talking about you can see from Tosfot. No, from Rashi. The Rashi on the Mishnah that this is a house that was already had bedika. The only bedika correct. We're talking about is a secondary bedika because something happened.
Correct.
So it's not like the Chiyuv.
So is the second Chiyuv Bedika different than the first Chiyuv Bedika? Meaning,
yeah, sure, it's only Bidiyavad.
No, but I'm asking you the following. In the first Bedika, what generates the Chiyuv Bedika? The fact that I know that sometime during the year I took Chametz in there. Do I know the Chametz is still there?
So
why not say the same thing in the case of the Chulda? I know that the Chametz went into the house. I saw it with my own eyes. You want to tell me, well, maybe the Chulda ate up the Chametz. That's why we need a bedika. That's the very nature of bedika. As I said before, the whole enterprise of bedika, the whole obligation of bedika is built on suffering.
No, but for the house, we know bavanda that we ate chametz there. We had in the first mission, makom she'ein machnisim lo chametz, lots of.
Right. So I'm saying now that the chulda, and I witnessed it, brought the chametz in, then it becomes a makom she'machnisim lo chametz. By the way, makom she'machnisim lo chametz doesn't mean that the chametz went into the house 50 times. Makom shemachnisim chametz means on one occasion I know the chametz went in. So if I know that it went in, I have to figure out whether the chametz is still there. And if I don't know if the chametz is still there, I have to do a bedika. Yeah. So why does Gemara think, well, maybe the chulda ate the chametz? That doesn't make any sense.
But I'm just saying there's a difference between a vadai and a safek.
But I'm just saying that once the chulda was seen bringing in the chametz, that's a vadai. So now it's a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. Well, in a makom shemachnisim bo chametz, you can throw at me all the sfeikas in the world. Maybe this, maybe that. The chametz disintegrated, it flew up in the chametz had wings. My wife cleaned out the chametz. You give me 50 different reasons why I would assume maybe the chametz is no longer there. I'm still chayav in bedika. Why? Because the chametz went in. So if you accept the Ravid's premise, And I think Rashi is also operating within the Ravid that the whole nature of the Chiyuv Bdika Derabbanan is because of the Safek, then Chulda is not going to solve your problem because maybe this Chulda ate the Chametz, maybe it didn't eat the Chametz. I could always ask what happened to the Chametz that went into the house. That's not going to exempt me from Bdika. So Rav Bosa, I want to suggest that just like in the case of a chaver sheiniach megorish al peros, what the Gemara means here, when it says that we can assume that any fruits that are in the possession of a chaver, he was mafrish. And what does that mean? That prevents the suffek from even coming into existence. I don't have a right to make a suffek tevel on fruits that are in the possession of a chaver. The Gemara also thought that in the case of chametz, when the house received this chametz, the answer is it never received the chametz. What the Gemara thinks is that when the chulda brings in the chametz, what is the chulda going to do with this chametz? It's going to eat the chametz. And therefore, the Gemara thinks if the chulda is going to eat the chametz, then that's not called a makom shemachnisim bo chametz. Meaning, there was never chametz in the house. Why? Because the same chulda that brought in the chametz immediately took the chametz out or ate the chametz. I don't know if she eats the chametz in the house or outside of the house, whatever it is. Where do I have a precedent for this? You may remember, again, for those who were with me a few days ago, Tosis Dibra Maskel V'im Timtza Lomar. And Tosis there establishes that even though Madura Shal Akum is a Rishus HaYachid, I will still not apply the universal principle of Kol Svekes V'Sveki Svekes Shata Yochel Harbos is Kulam Tmeim. In other words, in the case of Rishus HaYachid, I always assume no matter what suffek and piles of sfekas I could gather together and put one on top of the other, it's always going to be tame. So Tosis answers, this is different. Why? Because this is called suffek bia. Meaning, in Rishus HaYochid, I know there was a sheretz in the Rishus HaYochid. I know there was a mess in Rishus HaYochid. There was a bia. There was a vadei bia. Once there's a vadei bia, I can add one suffek after the other, and they're all tame. But here in the case of Maduris Akum, where I don't know for sure there was ever a Nefel there, that's called a Suffolk Bia. And a Suffolk Bia means there was never a Suffolk to begin with. Because the Chazaka is that you're tar until we know otherwise. The Bias is tar, Becheskes Tara, until we know otherwise. And if you have a Suffolk Bia, then it doesn't even trigger off the halacha of Suffolk Tumber Shusayochi. Here also, I'm going to suggest that we don't know if there was ever bias chametz, because the chulda is holding on to the chametz, enters into the house, but never really puts the chametz into the house. You follow what I mean? There's never a permanent kind of hanachas chametz in the house. What does the chulda do with the chametz? It eats it, or immediately hides it. It takes it away from the house. That's called like a suffek bia. And what the Gemara thought in the Havamina is that there's no reason to obligate a person in Bedika. Just like in the case of Madura Shal Akum, what the Chulda tells me is that I don't know if there was a Nefel there, because even if there was a Nefel, what did the Chulda do with the Nefel? It ate up the Nefel. And therefore, I don't even know that there was ever Tumah there, because the Chulda controls the areas. You remember we used to talk about certain neighborhoods where the hoodlums, I don't know what word you use in different languages, right? You know what I'm talking about? Hoodlums? Can you give me another word? That's a slang word. But you know what I mean? There's certain neighborhoods where the gangs, right? The gangs control the neighborhood. They decide what goes in, what goes on, and what doesn't, right? So the chulda is like a gang. The chulda controls the Madura Shalaku. And it's as if the Nefel was never there, because the Nefel never got a chance to have, pardon the pun, a life of its own, and therefore the chulda immediately swallowed up the Nefel. That's called a suffek bia, because we don't know that the Nefel went in there in any sort of permanent way. that would generate tumah, because maybe it was there for a few minutes, but it was immediately removed and consumed by the chulda. The Gemara thinks that the same logic should apply to bedikas chametz, that since the chulda is holding on to the chametz, it's like the gang that controls the neighborhood. Nothing happens here with this chametz without the okay and the supervision of the chulda. The chulda says, "This is my chametz. No one's going to touch this chametz. I want it for myself." And the Gemara thinks that just like in Nefel, the Chulda prevents even the Bias Tumah, so too in the case of Bedikas Chametz, the Chulda prevents the Suffolk of Bias Chametz. So when is there a Halacha of Makom Shemach Nisimbo Chametz, Chayav Bedika, where the Chametz was there, it was meant to be there, it was stored, it was permanent, you know, I got boxes and boxes of Cheerios up in my closet, now you want to know, did I get rid of all the Cheerios? Well, for that you need a bedika. But if there was never a permanent, serious kind of entry of chametz, because it was the chulda that brought in the chametz, the chulda is holding on to the chametz and controls the chametz, the chulda is holding on to the chametz not because it's doing exercises for the morning, and the chametz is you know, carrying the chametz is building up the chulda's muscles, but the chulda is holding up the chametz, why? Because a chulda likes chametz, and a chulda wants to eat the chametz. If that be the case, then the same chulda that brought in the chametz brought the chametz out. And it was never a bia, there was never a makom shemach nisim bo chametz. That was the Gemara's havamina. And the Gemara's maskana is, well, according to Rav Zeira, you know, that's not true. Because the chulda actually doesn't eat up the chametz. The chulda is meshayre. You know, the chulda is like the ant. I don't know how you pronounce it in your language. The ant. Anyway, and the ant, the way we say it in Brooklyn, is in charge of saving, of, you know, they say that it's mind-boggling. I mean, Shlomo Mel talks about this in Mishlei, that an ant only lives for about 6 months, and they gather together enough food that can last for years. That's why we have to learn what's called the zrizus. We have to learn how to be careful from a chulda. You know, that you shouldn't eat up what you have. Anyway, not a chulda. I meant to say a namola, right? A namola is not an otzel. It's not a namola. Also carries weight that's way beyond its capacity to carry. Why did I mention that? Oh yeah, because Rav Zera says that a chulda wants to put away chametz for a rainy day, for a snowy day. So the chulda is going to hold on to some of the chametz. That's called mishayre. Rava says, I don't have a kasha here. Why? Because this is called a vadai. Once we see the chulda taking into chametz, into the house, that's called a makom shemach nisim bo chametz. That's Rava's chiddush. Rava's chiddush is that despite all your logical and impassionate arguments here that the chulda is in control of the chametz, one thing I can tell you for sure, the chametz is in the bias has chametz in it, and therefore you've changed and altered the status of the bias. The bias now is chayev in bedika. There's a chezkas chiyuv bedika. Now, as I told you before, the Gemara offers another answer to the question of chaver sheniach megura peros, malea peros. In the first answer, we said that it's vadai that the chaver would be mafresh maase. Now the Gemara says, no, I'll agree with you that in the case of a chaver, we're still in a suffix situation, either because he never told us specifically that we could eat these fruits, or because there's a miut nikar, there's a 20% of the population that in fact is not mafresh maaser. But rather, Ebois Ema, this is six lines, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. Ebois Ema, Safek u Safek, who the reason why we're allowed to eat these peros, this tvua, is because, to begin with, we don't know the teteva. What do you mean we don't know the teteva? And the answer is Rav Oshi. Dilma, perhaps, meikara, from the very get-go, Amor delo tvili. Maybe there's a possibility that this fruit was never tevel to begin with. Kidrav Oshia, the Omer Rav Oshia, Marim Adam al Tvuaso. This is what's called a harama. You're familiar with that language, harama. Harama means a way of circumventing the law. The Torah really designed the law in such a way that you will be mafrish maaser. Never the Levi needs the maaser, but you're within the letter of the law. You can do a trick, and if you're very shrewd about it and very clever about it, you could be marim. And how do you do this harama? Machnisa, which means you take it into the house, bimotz shalom, while it's still in its natural state, it's covered, the kernel of grain is covered by its chaff. And in such a case, I'm going to skip a few words for a second, upetura min amaser, and there is no tevel. It's not tevel. You don't have a chiyuv maser. Why? Because you brought it into the house before what? Before meruach, before you took off the chaff. So it works like this. Basically, there are three stages in Tevel. The first stage is a preliminary stage, which I wrote on the blackboard. That's called Havas Shlish. Havas Shlish means the fruit grew and it matured to a certain point, which halachically has what's called a Shem Pri. It's already considered a Pri. We'll talk about the significance of that in one moment. Stage number two is what's called Gmar Malacha. Gmar Malacha means that he prepared the fruit, or in this case the grains, in whatever way he has to prepare it. In its natural form, it's not edible. So he has to do something to make it edible. That's called Gmar Malacha. Then we get to stage three. Stage three is called taking it into the house, otherwise known as Re'ias Pnei Habayis. It has to go into the house. He was marim. He did a harama. He did a trick. And he switched the order. What he did was, instead of doing the gmar malacha and then taking the fruits into his house, he took the fruits into his house before the gmar malacha. That's called machnisa b'motz shalom. As long as it has the motz, it has this chaff that covers the kernel, it's not considered Gmar Malacha. And in such a case, since he switched around the order, it never becomes Tevel. Normally, once there was Havah Shlish and Gmar Malacha, and then he brings it into his house, it's Tevel. But here it's not Tevel because he brought it into this house before the Gmar Malacha. He switched the order around. If that be the case, then whenever I see Tvua, I don't know whether it's obligated in Maser or not, because I don't know exactly when the Gmar Malacha was implemented. Was it implemented before the Meruach? I'm sorry, before the Knesset L'Pnei Abayis? Or did he switch around the order and he first took it into the house? So I have this Megura Malea Peros. Let's say I enter into the house of this Chaver. Unfortunately, he's not alive anymore, so I can't ask him. And I have to look at these fruits and decide whether they're tevel or not. So the Gemara says, I don't know that they're tevel. Why? Because it could be they were brought into the house before what? Before Gemara Malacha, before he did the Meruach. Meruach means the winnowing. He didn't take off the chaff. And if he didn't take off the chaff before he brought it to the house, then Peturim in Amaser. And even if you'll tell me that it was tevel, and he didn't do this Harama, but maybe he was Mafrish. So, in essence, what the Gemara is saying is that any case of a Magura Malea Peros of a Chaver is Safek Usafek. And the reason why I'm allowed to eat from these fruits without being Mafish Maser is because I don't even know it was Tevel, and even if it was Tevel, maybe, perhaps, the Chaver was Mafish Maser. When I put that all together, I end up with Safek Usafek. And therefore, I can eat from this Tvua. Not so in the case of Chametz, because there I saw the chulda take the chametz in, chulda put it down, it became a makom shemach nisim bo chametz. Now you want to say, maybe the chulda ate the chametz. That's not a reliable rov, and therefore we're still in the getter of safek, and ain safek motzi midei vad. So Rabosai, what's our job for tomorrow? I just want to set the record straight. Tomorrow, we want to look at a Tosfos, Dibra Maschil Kedei. But now you're going to ask me which Tosfos Dibra Maschil Kedei. So we have what's called the Kama and the Basra. We're going to look at the Kama, the first of two Tosfos, both of which begin with the word Kedei. And we're going to try to figure out what is going on in this sugya, because the sugya seems to be oblivious to the fact that even after I pulled off this harama, it still is tevel. The Gemara quotes Rav Oshia, but it's really in a sense a misquote, because if you're going to be accurate about it, Rav Oshia says that if you pull this harama off and you did the Bri'as Pnei Abayis, you took it into the house before the Gemara Malacha, then you're allowed to feed it to your animal. But obviously, it's usur for Achilas Adam. Otherwise, why did Rav Oshia say Kedei Shetei Behemto Ochelas? And the answer is that Achilas Adam is called Achilas Keva. It's a permanent, serious kind of Achila, and that's prohibited. So if that's prohibited, then we're back to a situation of Vadai, V'ein Selfik Motzim Dei Vadai. The Gemara never really answered its question. That's what we're going to see tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. Tosis Kidei Kama. Everyone should have a great day.